Government Committee to order. And my first official order of business is to wish Judith Collins a happy 29th birthday. We have a few cupcakes. Anybody that's brave enough to do it can walk up and have them. Otherwise, Judith gets to eat them all later. You know.
Please eat some, in other words.
Anyway, we're gonna put them back there. Maybe you ought to put them on the witness stand. I don't know where she wants them put.
That's a good idea.
Anyway, happy birthday, or happy 29th, or whatever it is.
That's a good number.
That's a good number. She's sticking with it. I said, could we do this on the record? And I was reminded by Linda that Representative Nelson actually sang happy birthday to me on the record. So, you know, anything goes, huh? Well, if you want to sing a solo, you can. I don't lead singing.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it's remarkable because it is my son's birthday today, and he is 27.
Wow. And she's only 29.
And you're only 29.
Yeah.
You could almost be my child. I'm very excited.
You're too young for that.
If we can get down to business, I'll tell you that we're going to be looking at Senate Bill 310, Senate Bill 984, and Senate Bill 1003 today. As the chairman that's been working hard throughout the session on these bills, I'm aware that there are three votes this afternoon for the Dash 14 amendments. And so what I'd like to do is open a work session on the Dash 14 amendments for Senate Bill 310. There's no reason to waste a lot of time here. We can just cut to the chase. People can make the comments that they want, and we can get on with the show. Anybody want to hold forth on Dash 14s for a while?
Mr. Chair, the thing that worries me about the Dash 14s is that there is a process in place at this time in the court. And I like to honor that process. I would like to know what the Court of Appeals has to say about that case. And they will settle, I believe, on maybe two issues. One, the sovereign immunity, and the other on the defining of the records, what public records really are. And so for that reason, I'm not inclined to like the Dash 14s as well.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd actually like to make a motion on the Dash 14 so then we can have a discussion about them. Since they are my amendment, I'll admit to that. So I would move the Dash 14 amendments to Senate Bill
310. Okay. Senator Walker has moved the Dash 14 amendments to Senate Bill 310. Senator Verger has already spoken and can speak more if she wishes, but if others wish to chime in and make comment, have at it.
And then, Mr. Chair, if you'd like, I could go through the Dash 14 so everyone knows what they're about.
That'd be fine if you want to quickly go through the...
I appreciate Senator Verger's comments, and she's probably correct. That are probably the two issues where we disagree. But let me, if you have the Dash 14, Section 1 on the first page is all safe language from the original bill. Page 2, lines 1 through 9, that's agreed upon audit language that we've all agreed to. Section 2 is SAFE's language, and then my Dash 11 amendments that we already agreed to. That takes us through page 3. Page 4 is where the crux of the matter is. One of the issues Senator Verger mentioned on lines 5 through 11, that's the definition of employer account records. This is actually SAFE's language for account records, but for purposes of this bill, it would only apply to records from this point forward, and you'll see that as we get later in the bill. The rest of that page are the Dash 10 amendments that you've seen many times before, and that goes through page 5. Then we get to page 6, section 4. The bold print is SAFE's language, and I believe there's been expression from other members about the need for geographic diversity on boards and commissions. Say page 7, that's still safe language. Page 8, you get down to lines 29 and 30, which spills into page 9, lines 1 through 8, and that's the second crux of the matter, the sovereign immunity issues. So that basically says that SAFE cannot be exempt from the contempt powers of the court. And on page 9, subsection 10, which is lines 9 through 12, that's all SAFE's language. Section 6 is SAFE's language. Section 7, I think that's part of my language. Section 8, which is on page 10, lines 10 through 17, that's all the agreed-upon audit language from the Dash 8 amendments. Section 9, again, is the Dash 4 amendment, sovereign immunity issues. And then Section 10, line 21 through 30, spilling over onto the next page, that would be the employer account records definition that Judge Lipscomb gave us in his ruling, and that would take precedence over other employer account records. So it's all employer account records previous to the passage of this bill. And then Section 11 is the E clause.
Okay. Senator Virgin.
Apologies, Senator Walker. I should have let you move the Dash 14s before I made my comments.
That's quite all right, Senator.
But I want to also add there are many, many things in the Dash 14s that I have agreed with. And I want to compliment Senator Walker for the very hard work that she's done. Mine is strictly in allowing a process through the courts to take place that would be satisfying, I think, to me.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Verger. I appreciate your comments. I think the credit goes to this entire committee and the chair for the hard work that we've all done on this bill, and it was very difficult distilling it all down into an amendment that we could really get to, and even then we only have 3 votes on this committee to do that, but we can't dink around anymore. We know that. We need to put out a product that we've worked months on, and I think we can be proud of this product, even though there are a couple of minor differences that you may have with it.
Senator Walker, a question. In the Dash 14 amendments, there is a place where Judge Lipscomb's definition of employer account records actually ends up in statute. Where is that?
That is on page 10, on section 10.
Page 10, lines what?
21 through 30. And then that spills over into lines 1 and 2 on the next page.
I guess my problems with the Dash 14s and the reason I'm opposed to them would be this whole sovereign immunity issue and actually putting Judge Lipscomb's stuff in statute before there's even any appeal heard. Senator George, I assume you have some comments you'd like to make.
Well, I am comfortable with this decision. I think that the period of time that's been necessary to get to this point, the resistance, by SAFE and complying with what reasonable requests were, I think has brought about the need for this kind of clarity. If I were a judge in a situation like this, I would appreciate folks providing maybe an enhanced definition to get in the process. This is not unusual. The legislature has done it before. And so I'm comfortable with that.
Okay.
Action.
Is there any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I just did want to state one thing on the record about the sovereign immunity issue. SAFE's argument will be that the legislature must state what it means by sovereign immunity, and I think that's what we're doing here. They've argued that they have sovereign immunity, and yet they'll argue that the legislature hasn't defined that. So I think we're just defining it for them. And there happens to be a court case in process. That's not unusual. This legislature has done things before that impact cases that are before the court. In fact, we do it pretty frequently each session. So I appreciate your comments about that, and I just wanted to get that on the record.
I want to underscore that about 95% of whether you're looking at the dash 14, dash 15, or dash 16 amendments, about 95% of this is stuff we agree on. The stuff we disagree on, I consider very significant. So with that, we're going to get Senator Starr back in. He did not want to make any comments. We asked him about that about 60 seconds ago, so we'll give him a chance to come in. And first, we'll be voting on the Dash 14 amendments, and then we'll be voting on the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, yes. I forgot there was one other thing I wanted to state about the employer account records and why I think it's important that we be able to get the records going backwards. There is a statute that I asked Judith to leave at your desk, 656.526, and in that statute it says that any dividend so declared shall give due consideration to the solvency of the Industrial Accident Fund and not be unfairly discriminatory and not be promised in advance of such declaration. The whole purpose of needing to get those records in the past is to determine if there has been discriminatory action on the part of the State Accident Insurance Fund with regard to some of these group plans. So that's why that's pretty important. And I thought it protected employers because it's going backwards in their old records. So I think we need to take a look at that.
I appreciate you putting that on the record. I'm sure everybody is taking cognizance of that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
With that,
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I apologize for having stepped out of the room, but I want to make absolutely certain about something, that that Section 10 on this of the Dash 14.
And what page are you looking at?
Page 10, Section 10.
Page 10, Section 10, everybody.
Now, that is the definition of employer records that institutes the effective date of this act going backwards, the Lipscomb definition. And then, so what's the definition going forward?
That would be earlier in the bill. That would be on page 4, lines 5 through 11, Mr. Chair and Senator Starr.
And this is the language, Mr. Chair, that that SAFE had suggested.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's I wanted to make that clear. Thank you.
I don't think you were in the room when I said I was uncomfortable with Judge Lipscomb's definitions actually going into statute before there's even an opportunity for an appeal process. Okay, any other discussion? If not, we have before us Senator Walker has moved the Dash 14 amendments to Senate Bill 310. I'm going to ask Linda if she'll call the roll.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Virgin?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Chair Hill?
No. Okay, we've passed the Dash 14 amendments. Mm-hmm. Senator Walker, I assume you have a motion you'd
I
like
do.
To make.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 310 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Walker moves Senate Bill 310 to the floor of the Senate as amended with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The comment that I would make is a lot of folks have spent a lot of time and come to a point where I think both sides of the issue have compromised. This is really a compromise document. Nobody got what they wanted. I think anybody can point out flaws in this bill, as in most pieces of legislation. And I just think that we've come to a point where I think we have a majority on a committee to move the bill forward. It's probably not exactly how I would do it if I were to do it on my own. But this is the process that we're in, and I think it's time for this committee to act and move this bill through the process and get it maybe across the Senate floor and into the House where they can take their shot at it, and maybe they'll have a different perspective. But for where we are today, for me, this is a place where both sides have compromised, both sides have given some bit. So just wanted to put that on the record.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you because I've been in the position, as you are today, to not be supporting the bill before the committee, but because of agreements that we make with our committee members, I just want to thank you and honor you for upholding that. And it's the right thing to do, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator George just commented on what I was going to say, because this is the second time this session that you have allowed that to happen. And I, as a chair of a committee, would have allowed that to happen on a bill that was before my committee, but the parties could not get the votes necessary to move the bill, but I was quite willing to do that. It is unusual in this process where a committee chair has the absolute power to kill legislation or move it, and I admire that and I respect that, and I just want you to know.
Well, just let me say that we have worked on a bill from the middle of the interim to the present, and I was always committed to getting some bill brought forward. That doesn't mean that I'm without resources, and I think you all know what that means. I think we should just go ahead and vote. No further discussion.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Stone?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
No. Senate Bill 310, having received a constitutional majority, is passed, and I do serve notice of a minority report. Most of you in the audience and up here have not only dash 14s, but 15s and 16s. The dash 16s are, in fact, what I've spent a lot of time working on for the last two or three months. They'll probably be the basis of that minority report. I have indicated to y'all, and I talked to every key person on this committee about this, I do not believe that the Dash 14s will get a hearing in the House, and that's why I was hoping we would go a little bit farther than we have today. In fact, I didn't have this yesterday when I talked to you, Senator Walker, but I had an invitation to go to the majority leader's office today, and that was once again confirmed. So we won't have a bill, according to the majority leader as of noon today, if it's the dash 14s, and so that's why I think that the minority report is even more important. Let's move on. We have Senate Bill 984 before us, and what I'd like to do is get Charlie Cheeks down here. He's been monitoring this on the television, and so I assume before we get very much said, he'll be down. There are dash 3 and dash 4 amendments, which are the crux of the issue when it comes to Senate Bill 984. So I'd ask you to kind of dig out your dash 3 and dash 4 amendments, and we'll have Charlie speak the authoritative word on what's before us. Anybody in the audience that's really bored can go have one of Judith's cupcakes.
Bored or hungry.
Huh?
Or hungry.
Yeah, right. Is this the time where I say, Charlie, where are you? There he is! Boy, it must just really be magic here. Ask and you shall receive. Now she's quoting scripture to me. That's always good for a preacher. Charlie, what I want to make absolutely certain of is that we all understand the differences between the dash 3 and the dash 4 amendments. This is all about the assigned risk pool. I don't want to do anything, and unlike the first bill where I knew all the votes and where they all were, I'm not quite so sure about it with Senate Bill 984. So we just need to be real clear about where we are on this bill. Okay?
Okay. For the record, Chair Shields, Charlie Cheek, Deputy Legislative Counsel, what I would propose to offer for you is just sort of a comparison of the two amendments. The Dash 3 amendments are based extensively on the Dash 1 amendments with changes in language that was submitted. And I think you may be a little bit more familiar with the Dash 1s than the 3s. The first difference that I would point out to you is that if you look at the Dash 4 amendments, subsection 3, ORS 656730 is amended to include this provision that the director of DCBS shall require, to the extent practicable, this rating organization information be made available to the Department of DCBS and to ensure service in the assigned risk plan. That, in the Dash 3 amendment, is a permanent provision of ORS 656730. The Dash 4 amendments. In the Dash 3 amendments, that provision is subsection 3 of section 2 of the amendment, which is a temporary provision.
So can you give us I hate the subsection stuff. Can
sure.
You give me a page
it starts
a line
on
number?
Page in the Senator Walker in on page 1 of the Dash 4 amendments, starting at line 22.
Okay.
Carries over to the first two lines on page 2.
Okay.
That's a permanent amendment. Amendment to a permanent statute. In the Dash 3 amendments, that same provision appears on page 2, lines 19 through 23, and that entire section is a temporary section. So that provision, one of the differences between the two is that provision in the Dash 3s would not become permanent law.
Okay. Can you tell us the implication of that?
Well, the implications would be that as far as the Dash 3s go, that authority of the director to get that information and use it would be used for the purposes of the report required under Section 2 that has to be provided to the legislature by August 31st, 2006. At that point, that this section is no longer operable. It's a temporary section.
So that's
and then that authority, excuse me, Senator Shields, that authority would not continue to exist in the director's.
And that reference is on what lines? That
the report?
Yeah, that makes it temporary. What lines are you referring to?
Well, nothing in it makes it temporary. As a matter of editorial policy, when we have something that requires a single act, it becomes a session law. It's the law of the state of Oregon, but once it's accomplished, it no longer has any more legal effect. It doesn't carry on.
Okay, so it's line 26 on page 2, essentially.
That is correct. That's when the date that the report is due by.
Mr. Chair, I just, before we get too far along, can you tell me what the difference is in the ability right now, without any of this, for the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to conduct this review? Am I wrong in believing that the director has the authority to do this right now?
I would be out of my league answering that question. I think there is that Corey is in the audience, and she might be the person to tell you what the director's
She's
authority is.
She's the person
is.
Who's shaking her head.
In that regard.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Then I will ask Mr. Chair that Corey come up later.
Well, have her come up
sure.
Now. Let's address this now.
I want to know if indeed the department has this authority, and under what conditions would Corey do a review? Is it led by the legislature, or
Mr. Chair? Senator Berger. For the record, I'm Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. We believe this study actually is within our current statutory authority. We also think it's an important study, and it is something we would intend to do during the interim, but we certainly have no objection being directed to do so by the legislature and being given a date to report back.
If you were to do it, how would you approach this study? Would it be more along the lines of three or four?
The study language is the same in both, in the dash threes and the dash fours.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I follow
up? Yes.
Corey, am I to presume that you have done these reviews prior to this time?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, the issue of the assigned risk pool specifically, we did a sort of first look during the interim because the issue came up with the interim general government committee, and we provided that sort of very preliminary first look to that committee, and what it made us realize is we needed to take a more thorough look because although the information exists, it's not a subject that we had looked at in the depth that it requires. Senator Walker had the study concept in, I believe, Senate Bill 751. We looked at it and said, that's right, this is something we really should be doing. This type of look at issues, in terms of the range of things that we could be asked to study, this is a fairly modest workload that would involve data that we already have or have very easy access to and would do with existing staff.
With your indulgence, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Corey, I think my problem here is that to begin with, first of all, I would like to know why those people or companies in the assigned risk pool were put there. And until I know that answer, I don't know how to move forward beyond that. I get a wall in front of me trying to get past that because I don't have an explanation of that. And I presume you don't have an explanation of that at this time, or do you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, we don't have a satisfactory one. That's exactly why we think this needs a thorough look. What we found when we took that preliminary look was that it's actually a sort of interesting and complicated set of issues. There are a bunch of statutory discounts and advantages and also some market factors that result in companies being in the assigned risk pool for quite a number of reasons, and we need to understand what those reasons are and to what extent it is or isn't advantageous and to what extent the private market could be responding better.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Charlie, let's move on, and you might stay there, Corey. We might have a question or two of you momentarily.
Section 3 of the two amendments calls for the submission of a report to the director about a plan to the director, and then it varies. Either section in the dash 4s, the plan is to be provided by Safe Corporation, and in the dash 3s, the plan is to be provided by all employers. Let's see, make sure I get it right. That have more than $80 million in written premium in the calendar year 2004 shall file a plan with the director to assist employers provided coverage by the assigned risk plan to obtain coverage in the voluntary market. So that's one of the significant differences between the two amendments as to who has to file this plan with the director.
So the dash 4s
Requires Safe Corporation.
Requires Safe to do it. Dash 3 is effectively require Safe and Liberty.
That's what I understand.
What's the practical implication of the difference between the two? If you're not qualified, I'll let Corey take a whack at that.
Mr. Chair, I think the issue right now, both Safe and Liberty are what we call servicing carriers. They, by contract, provide the claims handling services and coverage services to the employers who are in the assigned risk pool. We select servicing carriers through an RFP process, and so and that's every 3 to 4 years. Safe and Liberty were both selected last time around. So the effect of this language would be that both of the current servicing carriers would have the same obligation to come up with a plan to look at the ways to move people into the voluntary market. The other version would have only Safe with that obligation.
You just said it's an RFP that you do every 3 or 4 years. If somebody doesn't want to do it, they don't have to respond to the RFP. This is voluntary, not mandatory?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And we're, in fact, doing the RFP. The cycle is such that the RFP is actually in progress now. So we will be selecting servicing carriers later this year. And we don't know at this point whether we're certainly hopeful that our two current servicing carriers will propose. And we hope that we'll have some other proposals as well.
Has there ever been a time when you've only had one?
Mr. Chair, I don't know the answer to that question. And neither does Mr. Schiltz in the back of the room.
Well, with
it would
all
be possible.
Of our institutional memory not remembering it, it probably never happened.
And, Mr. Chair, it would certainly be possible to work with one servicing carrier, but it would be less desirable. SAFE, for example, is limited by law to Oregon-only employers.
Oh.
If we have an employer that has a business in multiple states, it is preferable to them to have a single carrier rather than to have to get separate carriers in Oregon and elsewhere. So it is preferable to them to have a choice of a carrier who is not limited to Oregon only.
Are there other questions? I'm kind of...
Yes.
Go ahead.
I have questions.
Senator Walker.
Ms. Streisinger, does SAFE pay federal taxes?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I don't believe they do. I don't believe they pay federal income taxes.
Yeah,
but
they don't. And would you? Can I just continue?
Sure.
Could you tell me why they don't?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, there is an exemption under federal tax code, and as you probably know, there's quite a bit of legal opinions about exactly what that exemption means and how it applies to companies like SAFE.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll continue if you don't mind.
Sure.
Ms. Streisinger, wouldn't that be because SAFE is supposed to be doing public good and benefiting the public and serving the public? And isn't that why they get an exemption from federal taxes?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, it's been a long time since I looked at that federal exemption, and I haven't seen all of the legal opinions. It's to some extent a rhetorical question, I think.
Corey, I'm not putting you on the witness stand for this. We've been through that. We have all talked in this committee about SAFE and some of the philosophy, the philosophical questions: is SAFE the insurer of last resort? And because it's the insurer of last resort, or if it was the insurer of last resort, is it therefore the one that should be responsible for picking up the the people in the assigned risk pool? That we wrestle with that, and I still wrestle with it. Even after a year and a half, I wrestle with it. I guess a question would be, why did they all of a sudden get moved out after the Mahonia Hall reforms? Has the committee ever really heard a definitive answer on that? I mean, after the reforms, I don't know when it was.
1987.
Well, all I know is about 10,000 people or employees moved from SAFE into an assigned risk pool. Why did that happen at that time? Was there something that in those reforms said, hey, they're not the employer of last resort anymore?
Mr. Chair, no. My understanding, I really cannot speak for the SAFE management at the time. My understanding is they made a business decision at the time, as they have made a number of business decisions since, about what their as a member of the voluntary market, who they were willing to offer coverage to, and under what conditions.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, that's kind of the crux of why we've got Senate Bill 984 and the Dash 4 amendment, because SAFE made a business decision at that time to dump employers and to reject all non-standard risks and put them in the assigned risk pool. And that was part of my 10-point plan after exhaustive study, was that we need to figure out how come they're dumping these people in there and why what efforts they're making to get them out. And because SAFE has this public purpose, which is implied, but apparently not in statute anymore, it's implied, then they should have to justify how they're working the assigned risk pool. And that's why I brought the bill forward.
Okay. I guess the crux of the question for me goes one step farther, and that is we have these low insurance rates. They're touted as one reason why businesses can move to Oregon. You know, we've got great workers' comp rates. Tell me what the effect of the difference between these two bills or these two amendments in Section 3 would be. Will this in some way affect low workers' comp rates? That's the issue that I'm trying to search out here.
Mr. Chair, the impact of the current status of the voluntary market and the assigned risk pool on rates is something I cannot give you a present answer to. I think the most important part of the bill is to learn more about the assigned risk plan and what the factors are that are driving it. That, to me, is an important issue for Oregon, small business in particular, who tend to be in the assigned risk pool. What happens then and who has what types of obligations to do what about it is a policy decision for the legislature. And I guess all I can say is, at the moment, I don't feel that I have enough information.
Would you have enough information after you do the study?
Mr. Chair, our goal is to have a whole lot more information and to be able to have you have more information to make policy decisions and us have more information to make recommendations.
Is there a reason why we should be defining your work product under 3 as versus under 4?
Mr. Chair, my interest is in the study, not in the rest of the bill.
Frankly. All right.
I think the important thing is for the study to be done. Neither of these are my amendments, incidentally. The proposal that I put forward basically just had the study.
Okay. Any other questions? Charlie, do you want to continue with any other differences?
Yes, I think I should point out to you the significant differences in Section 5 of the different versions of the amendment.
Okay, Section 5,
which
that would
on
be
page 3, starting on either on the dash 3s, it's on line 11, and on the dash 4s, it's line 7.
Okay.
Both versions require that the director shall adopt rules for the consistent application of workers' compensation rates, rating plans, and rating systems. The Dash 4 amendments then list specific criteria that shall be included in those rules. The Dash 3 amendments do not contain those criteria. Those are in line 16 through 24. Of the Dash 4 amendments. The second major distinction that should be pointed out is the Dash 4 amendments, starting on line 7 in subsection 1, makes a law that requires that the workers' rates, rating plans, and systems and supporting documentation filed with the department are not exempt from disclosure under ORS 192.410 to 505 of the public records law and shall be open to immediate public inspection upon approval of the director of the department. The Dash 3 amendments, the provision is somewhat different.
It's what page?
Page 3, line 14 of the Dash 3 amendments. says that the director may adopt rules that provide that all or part of any rates, rating plans, rating systems, and supporting documentations filed by an insurer are not subject to exemption from disclosure under 192.410-505 and shall be open to the public upon approval of the rates, the rating plans, or rating system by the director. So the distinction there, of course, is that the Dash 4 amendments make a legal requirement that those are open to, that are not exempt from disclosure under public records, and the Dash 3s leave that to the rulemaking authority of the director.
Oh, okay. Other questions at this point, or just headaches? Go ahead. Senator.
I need you to repeat the very last thing that you said.
Okay.
Under the Dash 3s,
mm-hmm.
you said it's not subject to exemption from disclosure under ORS 192, but the Dash 4 says something very simple.
Senator Verger, the distinction is in the Dash 3 amendments, the director may adopt rules that provide that all or part of the rating plans and the similar information is not subject to disclosure.
And where's the corollary over in Dash 4?
In Dash 4, starting on line 7, it says that those things...
Line 7, page 3?
Page 3, yes, sir. That those are not exempt from disclosure.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator George.
We had a similar issue in health policy, and that bill just went across the floor. And the argument that was used was that in order for folks to be able to understand the best opportunity to buy efficiently health care, that they needed to have a large amount of information. And we were going through that effort. The Senate required that all of the people who were supplying that service provide information that would then be available, you know, to the public so that they might make an informed decision about how they would purchase. And I'm noticing on page 3 of Dash 4 that we make that statement here apparently with the effort then to enable an employer with knowledge of a rating system to understand with reasonable effort and determine the modified premium may apply or that may apply to an employer. So I think, isn't that the purpose of this, though, is to make sure that the information that's gathered would in fact help a person as an employer to make an informed decision about how they should insure and what the criteria for rating them was. Am I misreading that?
If that's a question, let's get a response.
Well, from the perspective of the drafting of the amendment, I think that would be a correct observation in that the Dash 4s specify what those rules must allow for.
Right.
And in the Dash 3s, it says that the director shall adopt rules for the consistent application, but it doesn't go into that detail of criteria.
Okay. The reality is that one of the differences I see, line 13 of the Dash 4s says the director shall adopt, and line 14 of the Dash 3s, the director may adopt.
Well, actually, the parallel is in subsection 1, starting in line 11 of the Dash 3s, where it says the director shall adopt the rules, and then it doesn't have all the specificity that's included in the Dash 4 amendments.
You just threw me off there. That's okay. What legal counsel is for, you know, to throw us off a little bit.
Right. In
so
one instance,
shall adopt,
right.
The operative part is shall adopt both times.
Right. In one, in the Dash 3s, that it's subsection 2 starting on line 14. Okay. Excuse me. I misstated myself. It's line 11, subsection 1. In the Dash 4s, it's subsection 2 line starting on line 13. They're flipped in the order that they're presented in these two amendments.
And why was that? Just to confuse poor dumb legislators?
If I could remember, I would be brilliant, but I've done so many amendments to this, I can't tell you why they were flipped.
Okay. Well, there's a good reason somewhere.
Somewhere there's a reason, and that's correct.
Are there more questions at this point? I guess I want to give you guys a chance. I guess I'm always asking the same question, and that is, what's the practical effect of this? Anybody?
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. There's two separate issues. One of them is the actual rules on how to do rates, and the other one is confidentiality of rate filings. With respect to the rule, the actual rules, the difference, of course, is that in the Dash 4s, you're setting out a fairly specific template for what those rules will look like. In the Dash 3s, you're giving policy direction but not setting out the specific template, and leaving the specific template to the administrative rulemaking process, where the technical folks who understand the key differences can get in there and slug it out. With respect to confidentiality, same thing. In the Dash 4s, you're saying it's all public. In the Dash 3s, you're saying rulemaking will decide how much and to what extent it's public.
Another way of saying it would be in Dash 3s it's public, but can be exempt by the director. Right? And over in the 4s, it's just absolutely public. Am I wrong?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. In the Dash 4s, you're making the decision that it's public. Mm-hmm. In the Dash 3s, you're delegating the decision. And, Mr. Chair, in terms of the practical consequences, I will say each insurance company, and there are more than two, that there are two that have a larger share of the market in Oregon, but we have quite a few other workers' compensation insurers as well, and each of them is going to approach these issues differently. In terms of the methodology by which they set rates, this methodology that's set out in the Dash 4s is pretty specific. It's going to be more comfortable for the business model for some insurance companies than others. In addition, in terms of what's public and what is not public, some insurance companies view their rate setting the backup documentation and methodology as one of their most precious trade secrets. Others have a more simple methodology that they have less concern about. And so the rulemaking process would allow those different workers' compensation insurance companies to weigh in and argue it out in a rulemaking context as opposed to the legislative context.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
That brings up an important point for me. In the Dash 4s, If you are instructed that it be made public, and I'm a company that considers that my trade secret, and you make it public, I can sue you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, no, you would not have a choice. Your choice would be not to participate in the Oregon market. And you know, one of the issues we have in Oregon is we want this to be a market where more workers' compensation insurers want to participate. There's obviously a wide variety of views on what does and doesn't make that more or less likely. But to the extent that the Dash 4 specificity would discourage new entrants into the market, of course, that would not be a desirable outcome.
So are you suggesting that the Dash 4s might keep some insurers from coming into the Oregon market?
Mr. Chair, I think that's a possibility. I think that's been expressed by some of the lobbyists who represent multiple insurers.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I've never heard that expressed in here before this committee, and there's no basis in fact. I've seen nothing that says that's a fact.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I can't speak to what you've heard in front of this committee. Mr. Monroe has just been bending my ear about it.
Is Mr. Monroe here? Jack, do you want to come up and comment? Is this getting at your question, Senator Verger?
It is. Mm-hmm. It is, indeed.
Senator George, have you got an interest in this question as well?
Definitely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jack Monroe, and today representing the American Insurance Association. The AIA writes a good deal of workers' comp insurance elsewhere in the country, probably approaching 30% of the insurance nationwide, and writes a much smaller portion of the market here in Oregon. And I think Director Dreisinger have done a wonderful job both of capsulizing what the two issues here are, and in fact indicating what the concern will be on behalf of other insurers, other than the two that have been the subject for most of the discussions relative to this bill and other bills. And in fact, the other people that are writing here often, for example, just to give you an example, are writing niches in the Oregon market. They have become specialists in writing, let's say, auto dealers or construction people, and they know that business intimately. And in doing so, and based on that knowledge, they make considered judgments with regard to where they're going to place people, let's say, if they have rating tiers and whatnot. And they are in many cases, of course, willing to, if you will, write a risk that a larger company without that knowledge might not write. And I think, as the director has indicated, they would consider that expertise to be very proprietary and would not seek to have all of that information out there in the public. While the analogy is not exact, and to use Representative as an example, because I know she sells a product, or her family business sells a product, I'm not sure that she would necessarily want to put together in great detail a pricing program and lay out exactly how she will consider everybody who happens to visit her establishment, and then essentially send that information to the Ford dealer down the street or another competitor. And as I say, the analogy is not right. Absolutely exact in all points, but okay. Essentially that's the issue here.
Is there anybody else?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would like to hear from Mr. Bow, because he represents one of the other largest insurers okay. in the state, as long as we're taking testimony.
Okay, Senator George, do you have a question for Mr. Monroe?
Well, I think it actually goes back to Corey.
Okay, let's let Mr. Monroe step back, and we'll let Brian Bow come up, since Senator Walker has asked that to happen. Your question... let's see. Your question is the next question. We're still working on yes. Senator Verger's question.
Yes.
Right, Senator Verger?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Brian Bow, representing Liberty Northwest Insurance. And I really appreciate the opportunity to address this because it's an important issue. The whole thrust of these amendments and what we're discussing came out of the discussions that we had between SAFE and Liberty that Ms. Dreisinger facilitated. And the essence of what we're discussing here is ensuring objectivity in the rate making and rate application process in Oregon's workers' comp market. And the concern has grown out of our concern and others' concerns that there has been excessive subjectivity in that process, and subjectivity leads to unfair discrimination. And it is not a desirable attribute in any insurance rate setting. And to the contrary of discouraging competition, because as you know from my previous testimony and the information that I presented to the committee, we have a dearth of competition in Oregon. The legislature's own study that they commissioned under Senate President Durfler indicated very clearly that the market is currently a duopoly between Liberty and SAFE, headed towards a monopoly with SAFE's dominance. What this amendment will do, what the Dash 4 amendment will ensure objectivity in the rate setting process and the rate application process, and it is our belief that that will actually stimulate competition, because you will be going the extra mile to ensure that there is not unfair discrimination in the rate setting. And to address Senator George's point, that's why we specifically discussed that language, that any employer would be able to come in and look at how the rates are set and ensure that, okay, he runs a plumbing company on the west side of town, to ensure that the plumbing company on the east side of town, which may belong to a different trade association, maybe access his insurance under a different deal, is not getting a better rate because of some subjective factors that have been applied in that process. We think that's very, very important. And while we understand sensitivities that some insurers have about disclosing, and once this information is filed with DCBS, it becoming public record, many other rate filing systems in other states, this is not an. This would not be an anomaly. This would not be out of the order. This would not
be public record. Yeah, exactly.
And we believe the net effect will be that it's going to eliminate this excessive subjectivity that's going into the rate setting and rate application process in Oregon. And by virtue of that, it will allow insurers to compete, setting rates on objective basis, based on objective information, and that's going to stimulate competition. That's going to cause a greater diversity of carriers to allow to write in the voluntary market here, and that will be a good thing.
How do you respond to Mr. Monroe's comments about some folks staying away?
They're already away, Mr. Chair. Go back in your file and look at the information I gave you. The companies that Mr. Monroe represents and the other companies that are right in this Oregon, he referred to it as a niche. We refer to it as accommodation business. The business primarily that they write here is businesses that are headquartered in other states that have operations in Oregon, and as a part of writing that account that's headquartered in another state, they accommodate their operations here in Oregon. Those insurance companies are not here actively marketing insurance in this state, and that's been well documented. There are basically only two carriers, Safe and Liberty.
So they're already gone. This public thing is not chasing them away.
It's not. I defy you to look at the market share statistics and come up with a scenario where this would, quote, chase away carriers.
Everybody defies me, so that
well,
that's nothing.
They're just not here. They're not actively writing. And again, that's been well documented.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator George.
My question fits right here. And this is for the three of you. And when I'm looking at this is the dash four, and I'm looking at section five, and it talks about the director of Department of Consumer Business Services shall adopt rules. And then it says what they're going to be doing, and then it describes from 16 on down to the part that I mentioned down on 24 and 25, the things would be included in that. Not everything that might be included by the director because they're making rules. The question is, though, this trade secrets issue, it appears to me there's no requirement if, in fact, you determine by rule that it is, in fact, a trade secret to divulge it. Because the 2425 line, if I'm reading the old farmer way here, it just said that you will, the end result of the product would be, is that you would provide information that might be beneficial for them to determine how they fit in the whole rate process. Am I correct in that? I think there's enough discretion there to protect those trade secrets.
Senator Shields, Senator George, I would say that's not quite correct in light of subsection 1 starting on line 7, which says that those, in fact, are not exempt from public disclosure and that they shall be immediately open to public inspection. Rates, rating plans, and rating systems and supporting documentation filed with the department.
Okay. Senator Berger.
I really appreciate your comments about wanting things to be fair. Let me just tell you kind of where I am as a policymaker sitting and reading these amendments and trying to make a fair. So I don't want to presume discrimination. I don't want to presume that people have been treated unfairly. I would rather be objective, not subjective, in my decision on this. Being objective, what I want is the study. If the study shows that there's been discrimination, unfairness, then to me that's the time I'll deal with that. I don't see enough difference in the threes and the fours to alarm me. The fours are far more specific. The only thing that bothers me a little bit is to Senator George's comment. If there is a company with, and literally it does not just subjectively, but it does by fact fall under trade secrets, they have every right to want to participate, but also not show all of their hand to all of their competitors. So would you respond to that, or do you not hold with that opinion?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, no, basically I do hold with your opinion. We do favor in the dash four, on the rate setting section, the listing out the specific template, as Corey referred to it in there, on that. The main portion of that, to use your word, that we find alarming about the dash three is the requirement that all carriers of 80 million plus premium in the state would have to respond to the study. And I'm speaking about the assigned risk plan portion of the bill now. And because, to hearken back to Senator Walker's comments, we feel very strongly that there is one carrier in the state that has a very specific scenario in which it was constructed and exempted from federal income taxes for some specific purposes and should have some special responsibilities in that regard. And we believe that requiring that carrier, which is Safe Corporation, to be the to respond to that study is an extremely important component. And so to answer your question, we favor the dash four amendments. But if you're saying to me, is the dash three acceptable? If the dash threes were to be modified to eliminate that requirement that all carriers of 80 plus million premium are required to respond to that study, we could live with the fact that it's less specific and allows greater discretion on the part of the regulator to adopt that. Does that answer your question? Do you understand the answer?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
We are adamantly opposed to the section that all carriers should apply equally, because we believe that just violates the whole kind of underlying principle of, frankly, why we brought the bill, which was to define more clearly SAFE's public purpose.
Thank you. Any more questions? Let's let Brian step back. Are there further things that we need to...
Yes, Senator Fields. There's one further distinction between the two amendments that I should point out to you, and that's in the dash three amendments. Subsection six contains a provision that is not in the dash four amendments. This calls for the department, for DCBS, the director, to conduct a study of every insurer that provides workers' comp insurance in Oregon that has two or more schedules of premium rates to ascertain whether the insurer and the rates comply with the provisions of the insurance code, and then make a report on the findings of that examination to the legislature by September 1st, 2006. And that's a different report than the one that's addressed in Section 3 of the Dash 3 amendment.
Senator Mr. Thorne? Chair, Ms. Reisinger, doesn't your department already look at these rates to make sure that they comply with insurance code?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, yes, we do several things. We workers' compensation rates are in a category that's subject to pre-approval. That is, they cannot be, they're filed with us, and then we review them to make sure that they meet statutory standards and actuarial standards before they can be used. This section, however, is dealing, as I understand it, with something slightly different. Not are the filed rates appropriate, but are they being applied appropriately by the insurance company? And as part of our normal enforcement, we also engage in an activity called market conduct examinations, where we go look at insurance company behavior. We do that regularly for a wide variety of insurance companies on a wide variety of topics. So as I understand this, it would require us to do a market conduct exam using our existing market conduct exam authority, and specifically to examine the workers' compensation carriers that use tier pricing and look at how that tier pricing is working.
So, question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Don't you already do what this paragraph suggests that you do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, we do, but we don't do every company all the time. We have looked at Safe Corporation, for example, three times in the last 12 years. So, you know, it's not every company every year, and this would say, do these companies now. Again, this is something that, given the attention that's been paid to this issue, it may well be that we need to slot in and schedule anyway, and I'm perfectly comfortable doing that.
So if Phelps wasn't here, you might not get around to doing this for a while.
Well, except I also listen, and I'm hearing a lot of interest in this particular area, and we take that into account in scheduling our work.
Further questions? I think that it's probably time just to have somebody advance one of these two and see where we are, and if you haven't got any...
I don't know. Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I would move a dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 984, but Senator Starr has a comment about that.
Okay. So. Senator Starr?
Could we have a recess for a couple minutes, Mr. Chair?
Yes, I think that's a wise thing to do. Let's recess for a few moments. You can all stand at ease. Back to order. I guess we were just in recess or pausing or whatever we were doing. But I think Senator Starr has a solution to our dilemma here. And so I'm going to ask Senator Starr to explain all of this to us.
Thank you.
Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to necessarily explain it all to us because it's unexplainable.
It's unexplainable.
But I will explain, I think, what we've come to a agreement. And it's a combination, Mr. Chair, of language that's in the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 984. I'm using the Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 984 as the base. What we're going to do is we're going to have to suspend the rules to conceptually amend the Dash 4 amendment. So, Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules to allow for conceptual amendments of the Dash 4 amendments.
Senator Starr has moved that we suspend the rules to conceptually amend the Dash 4 amendments. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that we strike Section 5 in the Dash 4 amendments. It starts on page 3, line 7 through lines 26. So we'll eliminate...
Okay. Line 7 through lines 26 on page 3.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chair, then we will insert from the Dash 3 amendments, Section 5, which is on page 3, lines 11 through 19 of the Dash 3 amendments, will be inserted into the Dash 4 amendments.
So you're inserting page 3, Dash 3, page 3, lines 11 through 19?
That's correct. And, Mr. Chair, based on the conversations that occurred among the committee members and the interested parties in the audience, I believe there are the votes to support that action.
Okay. Now, there's one other problem I'm going to ask.
That was it. I was going to...
Judith, to comment on one other problem here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Even before and now, also after the change that Senator Starr has just laid out, if you look on the Dash 4 amendments, which we're using for our base, page 3, line 27, we have a section there that applies... the rulemaking to filings filed as of the effective date of the act, but based on rules that have not yet been promulgated.
Mm-hmm.
So the suggestion of the insurance commissioner is to also then remove Section 6 from the Dash 4 amendments.
And, Mr. Chair, I would add that to the conceptual amendment motion.
I would like Senator Starr to restate his motion, including this piece that Judith has just given, and I'll try to repeat it back.
Very good. Actually, Mr. Chair, I think we can make it a little simpler. On I will move that we strike on page 3 of the Dash 4 amendments, we strike lines 7 through 30, which eliminates both Section 5 and Section 6.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right.
And then, Mr. Chair, that we insert from the Dash 3 amendments, Section 5, which is lines 11 through 19 of page 3 in the Dash 3s.
Section 3.
No, Section 5.
Section 5.
Dash 3, Section 5, lines what?
11 through 19.
Okay.
And Mr. Cheek is no doubt listening to us.
Mr. Cheek is probably pulling his hair out.
And shuddering and shivering. He got
okay.
into it, Charlie.
But he's happy to
Senator Starr moves in this suspension of rules conceptual amendment. That we strike in the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 984, page 3, lines 7 through 30, and we insert from the Dash 3 amendments, Section 5, lines 11 to 19. That's fairly clear. You said page 3?
Page 3. That's
page 3, Section 5, lines 11 to 19. That is so clear, nobody can be confused about it. Okay? Thank you for the epiphany, folks.
So vote on the amended.
So he has proposed the amendment. Is there any discussion on this conceptual amendment? Let's do a... Well, is there any objection to this conceptual amendment?
No.
If there is no objections, so ordered. We don't need to call the roll. Now then,
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I would move, we already have the dash, we have a motion already on the floor to move the dash to 4. So we,
didn't
well,
we have
we
a motion?
I made the motion to move
All
the
right.
dash 4.
Okay.
So we're moving the dash 4s as conceptually amended.
That's correct.
That's what you're doing. So Senator Starr moves the Dash 4 amendments as conceptually amended by our previous motion. Is there any objection? Is there any, excuse me, any discussion, any objection?
Mr. Chair, I want to give credit where credit is due here. I want to thank Senator Starr for having the foresight to try to fix this little problem and move us forward, and that we are a team here, and so many of us have contributed to this effort, and I want to thank everyone for that.
I want to thank Senator Starr, and I want to thank Corey for noticing that you couldn't do Section 6, which you hadn't adopted, you know, because, well, you can't do it. So I want to thank both of them for those. Any objection? So ordered. A motion, Senator Starr.
I move Senate Bill 984 as amended to Senate 403 to pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 984 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. As amended, with a due pass recommendation. Is everybody happy? I suppose we ought to do a roll call vote just for fun.
Senator Miller?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator
Berger? Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Aye. The Senate Bill 984 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Boy, talk about carriers. We hadn't got that far. We got all kinds of carriers so far, don't we? I'm going to ask Senator Starr if he would consider carrying that.
Certainly.
Agree to that? Okay. Thank you, Senator Starr.
I'm doing this on a carrier for 310.
The carriers for 310 are kind of obvious, I think. Senator Walker will be doing a majority report, and I'll be doing a minority report with some able help, I hope, all the way around. We have one other bill on our agenda.
I'll take that on.
Can you tell us, Judith, a little bit about what Senate Bill 1003 does?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 1003, before I go through what the original bill does, you had before you the Dash 3 amendments, which replace the original bill. The Dash 3 amendments require the Department of Consumer and Business Services to study the impact that the denial in workers' compensation claims has on services and benefits provided by other public programs and private insurance carriers. It directs the department to contract with an impartial entity to conduct that study. It specifies the study to include, but not necessarily be limited to, first, initial denials of workers' compensation claims, secondly, services and benefits received by injured workers as a result of workers' compensation claims denial, third, costs incurred by public programs and private insurance carriers as a result of providing injured workers with services, and fourth, that the costs be borne directly by injured workers whose claims have been denied. The measure, the Dash 3 amendments also would require the study results to be submitted to the Legislative Assembly by September 30, 2006. It would allow the Workers' Benefit Fund to expend money from that program to reimburse the department for expenses related to the study, repeals the provisions on January 2, 2008, and would declare an emergency effective on passage. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Discussion of this bill. Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is so appropriate. Just the other day, I had a constituent, actually a former constituent in my office, and this is a question that came up about what are the implications, what are the ramifications of an injury that's a legitimate injury not being taken care of, you know, by the system that we believe is put in place, and the fact that those costs have to be borne not only by the injured worker, but also everyone else that they turn to for help during that period of time. And I really think that this cost shifting is so legitimate to look at, so I'm very encouraged by this.
Yeah, I've had some of the same concerns. You wonder what's happening at DHS or Voc Rehab or wherever, that your own insurance company, if workers' comp doesn't. So it's an issue. I don't know where Senator Verger went. Senator Verger, we're in the middle of 1003 at this point. Just if you had any comments, you're welcome. Senator Walker, you have some comments
that you wanted to make? Yes, Mr. Chair. As you know, the Senate Bill 1003, the Dash 3 Amendment, is my Senate Bill 754. And I gave you all information about that before, and I talked to you about it in a memo I gave you last week. About my concerns that arose from the Mahonia Hall reforms, which were in 1990. I had a brain lapse a while ago, but it was in 1990. And in 1991, late 1991, I believe it was, the Oregon Department of Insurance and Finance, as it was called then, did a study of claims denials at SAFE and Liberty to determine whether workers' claims were being unfairly denied as a result of the Mahonia Hall reforms. Workers had been complaining about this. Our current governor was insurance commissioner at the time, did not undertake the study. Gary Weeks came in, was the director, and they undertook the study. The study at that time showed that SAFE misclassified 38% of the claims examined by the department's workers' compensation division. Liberty's errors were found to be insignificant at that time. In fact, Commissioner Weeks said on the record that there was a very careful look at Liberty Northwest in this process. And what was going on was SAFE was rejecting claims on any doubt rather than legitimate doubt, which was the legal standard. SAFE also required the injured worker to carry their own burden of proof at the time the claim was filed rather than on the appeal. This led to changes at SAFE, and things got a little better after that. But as I indicated when I gave you all that information from the hearings that were held in 1992 in the Senate Labor Committee, there was a lot of discussion about this, that people felt very strongly, and evidence was showing that costs were being shifted in the system, that employers were being denied compensable claims, so then they had to go out and get covered under their private insurance if they were lucky enough to have it. If not, then they became basically wards of the state by going on the Oregon Health Plan or getting some other way to cover it. I think, Mr. Chair, some have asked, well, why would we do this study? What would we learn from it? Well, I think we could learn a lot from it. I think we could learn if we have a significant number of people being shifted into other markets, which really cost the taxpayer money all the way around, then there's something broken at the front end.
And if we want this workers' compensation system to work fairly, this is one way to review that and make sure that it is working fairly. It has been 15 years since the reform. The reform should not have been the be-all, end-all. It's really important that we stay on top of this and continue to review it. That's why I think this study is very critical to do. Medical costs have just increased exponentially in all markets, and our insurance rates are up everywhere around the board. So let's see where the costs are coming from. I have to tell you, Mr. Chair, if you want to come and look at my files, I have a lot of cases that came to me during this past 18 months, almost 2 years now, where people had significant injuries they felt were work-related. They were denied a work-related claim. They went to their private insurance, and now the private insurance is saying, no, this is a work-related claim. So there gets to be this big fight back and forth, and the injured worker gets the shaft. So that's what this is all about. I understand this bill will probably have a fiscal, and we'll have to send it to the Budget Committee.
Yes, and I've been told that we need to pass this to the Budget Committee. Senate Budget.
Yeah, and I think.
Fiscal.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just appreciate that we do that and make sure that we can.
I understand the theory and the philosophy behind the bill. I agree that if there's a legitimate workers' comp claim out there, it ought to be handled and that there shouldn't be cost shifting. I also understand that there are people saying, all right, you gather the information. If we make too many changes, will we cripple workers' comp or push our rates up and no longer have the outstanding rates that the businesses of the state like to have and so on and so forth? But there's still a question of what happens. I mean, I've heard stories of kind of a settlement on the steps of the courthouse, you know, where they're ready to go to trial on something and the insurance company will come along and offer them pennies on the dollar, and they've been drugged through the ringer for so long that they'll settle. And so they settle for a pittance and it doesn't carry them for a lifetime, which is what the injury is. It's a lifetime injury. And so you have to have a workers' comp system that balances the needs of both the workers and the employers. And I don't know whether we can afford to do this study or not, but the idea is a right idea, and we shouldn't be just, and this is not safe or Liberty, this is all insurance companies everywhere. I mean, it's the right thing to do, but I think it's also the right thing to send it down to the Senate Budget Committee and have them look at the fiscal analysis of the whole thing. So that's motion that I would like to have.
Do you have a motion?
I'll make a motion. I'd like to move the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 1003.
Senator Walker moves the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 1003. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? If not, so ordered.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill 1003 as amended to the Senate Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation.
You forgot that it's a special committee
on
budget.
Committee on budget with a due pass recommendation.
So Senator Walker moves Senate Bill 1003 as amended to the Senate Special Committee on Budget. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? If not, so ordered. And with that, we've completed our business. I want to thank the staff a great deal for their work. And I want to thank you folks today for getting along as well as we've gotten along with very contentious issues. Thank you very much, committee. I hope we have some time to get together and have some fun at some point in time. And with that, the General Government Committee is finally adjourned.
Everybody, I left it.